Good evening. I'd like to welcome all these eared people in this room who have come into this hall, which is quite correctly called an auditorium. We're going to be looking at voice memory and the algorithmic ear. The era of classical radio is drawing to a close. This melancholy hiatus also holds out an opportunity. Radio, is becoming truly perceptible as an object for the insights of media archaeology as it disappears as a mass media. Radiophonic memory is its apparatus, from his master's voice, from the gramophone, to those interferences in tape recordings of Maria Callas's arias. Fake audio through machine learning is disturbing our deep-rooted phonocentric confidence in the presence of the radio voice. And yet it's those same algorithms which permit new forms of exploring the radiophonic archive. This is a plea for computer-based, radically media archaeological hearing. Under the title Der Ohrenmensch, Radio Explorations, the Haus der Kulturen der Welt is devoting these sessions to radio, a communication medium of the 20th century, just as it vanishes. Now that might sound dramatic, and yet it captures the very essence of radio. Electromagnetic waves vanish at the very moment of their emergence. The essential memorylessness, an essential feature of radio, makes this technical medium a privileged neighbour of Western phonocentrism as such. To what extent is radiophonics capable of memory in any case? Because archives, after all, are based on a symbolic order of the alphabet, not that of signals. It's a hermeneutic misunderstanding if sounds from sound carriers are equated with a radio broadcast in the past. The interesting thing about radiophonics from the point of view of media archaeology is the non-arbitrary nature of the transmitted signal. So when people associate ancient gramophone recordings, they don't only mean the voice of Caruso, but also all that crackling on the shellac record itself. This is the heard memory in the media sense, rather like the whistling on an AM radio or the sounds of telegraphic Morse code. Retrodigitalization of old sound carriers for archive purposes calls for oversampling so that we can also document the noises of the apparatus and the aging of the sound carriers themselves. So their physical entropy, their entropic decay is silenced at the moment of the sampling. Technical analysis with the assistance of algorithmic processing and graphic visualization in software tools doesn't only enable us to discover those otherwise hidden or intuitively perceived features of sound and to measure them, also draws attention to the storage medium itself. Using analytical software, these genuine radiophonic messages can be made. So in 1916, for example, we have recordings in our archive at the Humboldt University which make it quite clear that the recording medium was unable to capture certain frequency components beyond 4,500 hertz, whereas nowadays our sampling rate for compact discs is at least 44,000 hertz. This is something that media forensics has been practicing for a long time, this memory of the apparatus itself, the identification of a magnetic tape recorder by analysing mechanical damage to the layering of the magnetic tape. In Samuel Beckett's one-act play, Crap's Last Tape, in 1958, the tape recorder was the co-leading actor, if you like, along with the human being in that play. Media culture has developed an antitoxin that was able to banish the volatility of live radio, magnetic wire and tape recordings. Sometimes radio reminds us of that. For example, if we listen to Carian conducting Donizetti's Lucia de Lammermoor in 1954 at La Scala, Milan. And we'll hear that for ourselves in a moment. You probably heard the radio was singing too when the frequencies were slightly overcharged. It's part of the electromagnetic essence of telecommunication media, radio media, that they are exhausted in the moment of the broadcast. So they're as volatile in the technical receiver as the spoken word is in the human data sync. Within the boundaries of the speed of light, the reception of a live transmission is already the voice of the dead. Radio, until it was captured by its own digitalization, transforms sound and transmits it, but it doesn't store it. It is associated always with the moment of now within which the event takes place. That's what Wolfgang Hagen said when adapting Benjamin's definition of the aura for his specific medium. There are also supplementary, non-essential bondings of that volatile radio signal. For example, in magnetic tape recordings, rather like VTR in television. Early valve radios had a sound carrier input, which meant that they could be used as amplifiers for electromechanical record players. Or Grundig's satellite, which is a bit of a legend in the radio world, the shortwave recipients, had this alternative option, radio or phono. And phono meant memory on the record. Permanent waves, if you like. The transition from this self-exhausting live transmission and the magnetic recording of it is not a sudden leap. It is a transformation from one high-frequency medium to another, which is memorized in the lower frequency, alias speech and sound. So what is the relationship between electromagnetic vibrations as wireless radio transmission and the sonic sound on a magnetic tape? The combination of the radio and the cassette recorder in classical apparatus isn't just apparatus. This is an essential affinity between these two. High frequencies were used in magnetophonics, not just for transmission, but were used to pre-magnetize the actual sound signal. So there's an alliance between radiophonics and magnetophonics, a dovetailing between the storage and the transmission. And this is the time-based form of classical radio. A magnetophonic recording of the last announcement of the switch off of long-wave radio on Deutschland Radio doesn't prolong the actual end, but it does uncouple the announcement from the event. The last announcement was done on an AM frequency, but the replay of a magnetic tape is a different being. So the Grundig uses demodulation of an AM signal and turns that into a low-frequency signal, which is basically indifferent towards transmission frequencies. It forgets what channel it's on. Electromagnetic waves become a different channel when they are recorded. This electromagnetic event is the essence of radio. What remains is its reciprocal value, a magnetophonic trace. That's the only way that radiophony, with its disembodied sounds, can bridge not only spatial but also time distances. Radiophonics, that phenomenological backdrop for radio as such, remains effective in the tape recording, even as an instant recording on a record. But it's not the broadcast, it's not the media event itself. Hidden media time manages to elude what humans call history. So this option to discover things that had not been perceived or guessed at before have been achieved by prefigurative classification in the kind we have in radical media archaeology. We now have stochastic Markov chain-based exploration. The Active Archive project run by the Constant Association for Art and Media in Brussels has been asking since 2006, how can archives be active beyond preservation and access? Access. What would it take to give material away and receive it transformed? Michael Murtaugh and Nicholas Malavé undertook a number of experiments with the audiovisual estate of the Finnish artist engineer Erkki Kouriniemi. The website of his project has a logbook of algorithmic soundings from that archive. At least data visualizations, but also interactive explorations of voice signals, which survive from Kouriniemi's taped diary on audio cassettes from the 1970s. As part of a Kouriniemi retrospective at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Kiasma, in Helsinki, Murtaugh and Malavé resisted the temptation to work with original sounds, and instead, between the 1st of November 2013 and the 2nd of March 2014, they did spectrum sorting using algorithms of Kouriniemi's memory. This was Expressive Database, Data Radio, a web radio that broadcasts Kouriniemi's audio archive. Live stream is made of audio files from the archive, audio tracks from the movies and interviews. Over the days, different audio algorithms respond to the data being broadcast, and in a moment we'll hear some of that. What we had here are cassette recordings which Kouriniemi took while he was driving around in a car. What this algorithm does is that it only picks up the voice from the hundreds and hundreds of digitized cassettes. It distills the voice where he shifts from speaking to recitation. The recordings last for days. A human being wouldn't be able to do this so quickly, but this spectrum analyzer was able to pick up this physical difference in the live tracking that Kouriniemi did and resort it. So this tool sets up a kind of tenth of a second sound archive with dynamic pitches and extracts particular values and creates a new file, which the samples sort. And that achieves something that maybe we can use if we have software engineering tools ourselves. This remove silence tool, for example, algorithmically, you can distinguish intended silence from non-intended silence. Also, pauses, not just pauses in the sense of human speech, but pauses in the sound carrier can become perceptible, which means that the technical medium itself has a voice. How do we listen to a sound archive algorithmically? Michel Foucault talked about l'archive, and this is a typical exploration of digital audio signal exploration. We're not listening to the sounds, we're looking at the algorithms that derive from those sounds. I'm coming back to the Berlin archive now. We can transform this into an information system and process and calculate masses of data, analogous to what Lev Manovich talked about when he said how to compare 1 million images. We can do that with sounds as well. So the ear is no longer targeting the single sound artifact, but can engage in distant hearing, rather like Franco Moretti's approach to literature, using combinatorial analysis. So instead of the classical symbolic archive ordering, which is statistics-based, stochastic analysis of signal worlds enable us to expose a different structure to our archive. If we use discretization of the signals, we can generate new potential information. But the inverse of digitalization is the fact that normally the signal itself is reduced. Even lossless compression leads to limitations of the recorded frequency spectrum. So this revolution in media that we have, that we call digitalization, this is the great transcription of our cultural heritage. Every digital product is subjects signals to invisible technical protocols and power structures. And this archive calls for a new form of source criticism in the sense of active digital humanities. And this brings us on to false voices. In machine learning, the human ear is an organ of human cognition, but it reaches its limits here. So, for example, John F. Kennedy's speech that he was planning to give after he was assassinated in Dallas in 1963 can be reconstructed. I'll be coming back to that. Edison's phonograph induced a fundamental disruption of the human perception of presence, and that includes the present tense, at the signal level. The result of technical recording is you get these disembodied voices, like Caruso's voices on the gramophone record. Using the vocoder that Homer Dudley developed at Bell Labs for telephone technology in the United States, artistic voices can be synthesized in the same way that we call a synthesizer in electroacoustic music. This is the song of the siren in cutting-edge modernity. It's an acoustic Turing test. Is it the human being singing or the machine? Escalation today is called deep learning. You can train computer listening by using big data so that you can then regenerate automatically individual voices and styles. Then there is audio software to personalize voices. We can model the world in the era of high-performance computing. We call it simulation. And human senses can no longer distinguish whether the signals from a live concert on the radio or television or a recorded concert on radio or television are being broadcast. And when Helmut Kohl recorded his New Year speech in 19 whatever it was, and they played it back on the radio, they didn't even notice to begin with they were playing the wrong year. In the era of humanism and the Renaissance, source criticism was developed for alphabetic scripts. and the codes were still readable for people, but not for signals. These still had to be decoded, and they couldn't be by the human eye. But digital forensics have been doing this to recognize counterfeit images and sounds, and the hardware exists now to do that. So US President John Kennedy was assassinated on the 22nd of November 1963 in Dallas. Nevertheless, his voice has been heard for the first time giving the speech he was due to deliver on the day he was assassinated. The company Cereproc in Edinburgh processed sound recordings from 831 of his speeches to recreate the intended 20-minute speech he was going to give. All 2,590 words, more or less. They were able to do that by resolving the spoken words into phonetic units in order to resynthesize. Machine learning and artificial intelligence are used to analyze the individual pitches of Kennedy, and existing or recorded speeches were used to reconstruct this speech. You can hear it in a moment in the internet, including the background noise of the analogous recording technologies that were used at the time, which creates a kind of atmosphere to make us feel we are living witnesses. This is a real fake audio trap. So this is, if you like, Markov chains are enabling us to proclaim big data, give it a voice, and a sound past that was never present can be recreated. It reminds us a bit of cybernetic thinking in such a way, linking items so that they adapt, respond to sounds, so that computers can develop a technical ear. And these algorithms have a fine sense of hearing themselves. This can be applied in order to uncover implicit knowledge. Sonic analytics is rhythm analysis, and Lefebvre would have called it rhythmic analysis, I think. This is a mathematically precise meaning of algorithmized. So digitalization means that a passive, silent archive of sound can be activated, can be given a voice. Radiophonics tends to be defined as listening to sound and space by technical means. But is the body really the receiving device in the radiophonic constellation? We're talking here about human hearing. So yes, the ear is a part of the body, so this is cultural technology. If you look at McLuhan's Understanding Media of 1963, the way media archaeology understands this is that we're not looking at a black box here. The transmitter and the receiver, in the sense that Shannon was describing in his diagram, in his theory of communication, which I'm showing you here, are not based on human mouths and ears, but electrotechnical converters. I talked about that human data sink, but what you see here is the receiver and the transmitter, the way we normally define it. It's the technical apparatus that is the receiver that is able to break down those frequencies in their various components. So the radiophonics takes place within the technology. We don't hear it. And in our individual and collective perception of radio, we're not aware of this. It's a systematic epoché. The human ear is one thing. The technology of the ear is something else. Radio astronomy uses this, as we know. Douglas Kahn, for example, takes a scientific approach, or Jan-Peter R. Sontag takes a more artistic approach to exploring this so-called natural radio. For the human ear, it's often impossible to tell whether the sound has a natural origin or not. And this is a fundamental, bewildering aspect of logocentrism, epically formulated in the siren story in Homer's Odyssey. So sound perceived by human beings is just a subset in a huge quantity of vibrational forces. Understood as time-based form in its signal message, it's worth discovering the implicit sonic aspect in the radio itself. It's a technophysical embodiment of the spirit, of the mind. Hundreds of years of cultural knowledge allied to material, to matter. And from this point of view, more is being broadcast now than ever. Not primarily in the form of waves, which we as humans pick up from loudspeakers in the form of voice and music, but as discrete pulses in mobile data communication, whether it's wireless internet or other forms of sending impulses. So, out of radiophonics, implicitly, we have this folded in, secret, uncanny radio. Its perceptible phonics is more powerful in communication than it ever was before. Probably, machines will be better listeners than ear machines, understanding media in the active, literal sense. And both humans and machines are part of it. Thank you.